an option in the United States any longer.
The difference between the response to the killing, his killing of the ex-girlfriend and the police officer, and we only have 15 seconds.
Okay, sorry. Yes, I mean, I think that also shows another inherent shortcoming of the death penalty. It really depends on the victim. When there was the accusation that he killed his ex-girlfriend, there was not a manhunt. People weren't looking for him. People weren't calling for him to get the death penalty. But when there is the killing of a police officer, there is the calling of a death penalty. And so it just shows that it's an arbitrary system, and not everyone who murders someone gets the death penalty.
Angel Harris, we're going to have to leave it there. I thank you so much for being with us. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for a public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition, a very special edition, a Radiothon 2017 edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. And our special guest today for the show, the whole hour, what an honor, is the Honorable Mayor of Dearborn, John B. O'Reilly, Jr. And so we welcome him to WHFR. How are those headphones doing for you, Mayor?
Good.
Okay, can almost hear you there. I'm readjusting the levels. We'll be fine in a second. For those people that don't know, John O'Reilly likes to be called Jack these days. Jack O'Reilly. Heck with the middle initial on the junior, huh?
Yeah.
His dad, of course, was mayor of Dearborn, too, but he's clearly identified himself as the mayor now, and so we might call you Jack. No disrespect, please. Okay. He served as an elected public official in Dearborn since 1990 and as mayor since 2007. He was last reelected in November 2013, and before becoming mayor, he served as president of the Dearborn City Council for 17 years, and as I mentioned, his dad was mayor, too, of Dearborn before he was. So a lot of experience and a lot of history there. Knows a lot of things. We're going to try to keep him to short answers today because a lot of things have been happening around here. And if you want to, you say, well, I missed his State of the City presentation this year. I didn't see when he was going to have that speech. Well, you know, if you haven't been keeping up, he decided on a different format, hopefully, to be able to contact many, many more people. And so his State of the City address was actually five approximately 10-minute presentations each on video. And those videos are accessible through the cityofdearborn.org website as well as the city's Facebook page.
That's correct.
Yeah. And there were five topics. The first one dealt with the fire department, part two, police department, part three, economic development, part four, neighborhoods, and part five simply stated the future of Dearborn. And so we have some questions specifically about those individual segments that came to my mind anyway from watching them closely. Before we start, though, let me just say, too, if you want to go back to all those five presentations, and you just want to listen to it, we've combined all the audio from those five on the show that we did, the journal show that we did back on February 17th. So about 50 minutes, all the audio on all five, and you miss all the beautiful pictures of the various areas in Dearborn, but still you get the point of it. So if you want to review that, remember all of the podcasts for this show, including February 17th, 2017, are available on our website, whfr.fm. Just click on talk shows, click on WHFR Journal, and then the date. And in this case, the State of the City presentations are all collected together as one podcast from February 17th. And this is our Radiothon Pledge Day. But our phone systems aren't working too well. We're trying to raise money for a new internal phone system. We only have one phone line, and I think, you know, if it starts ringing, folks, we'll try to answer it. We've got a couple of people in the studio, but we're going to try to keep the interview flowing. You can go anytime to our website, whfr.fm, click on the Radiothon 2017 button, and you can donate right there on the website directly. We'll be taking a lot of phone calls on through the afternoon and evening and all day tomorrow also here at the website, here at the station. And so you can call at any time or go to the website anytime. All kinds of things happening here. Okay, well, just very briefly, just for opening, the terrible loss of electrical power in the Detroit area 2 weeks ago, I guess it is now, although it's emblazoned in my mind because I had no power for 4 days. Oh, boy. Had to make friends with my ex-wife again, actually sleeping on a floor there, but that's the way it goes. So does all of Dearborn have electrical power again?
Yes.
It's a crazy question, but you can say
yes.
Yes?
Yes. Okay. I'm sorry. Oh, not close enough? Okay. That's fine. Everybody's back up, but we were one of the communities pretty hardly hit, and we had, stations where people could go and stay overnight, and we had ice distribution and so on, but it was very difficult for a lot of people.
Yeah, I had a good interview, thanks to Mary Landroche, with Brad Smith of the fire department, the emergency coordinator for Dearborn, and he filled us in for 30 minutes 2 weeks ago. What was interesting is that there were some pockets still as late as the Wednesday after that, like Silvery Lane, I think they mentioned, that didn't have power. But that's because I guess the priority is to go with the bigger neighborhoods first, where you could fix like one pole or one tree, and then all of a sudden 500 or 1,000 people get back up at one time. So that happens. So it wasn't the city's responsibility, but everybody here at the city really had to do extra duty, especially police and fire. Yeah, great job, as I know. Yeah,
and again, it's one of those things that we hope can be mitigated, but a lot of it is just, the infrastructure, and then in that case, just the incredible power of that event.
Right. The police department even did some things. Brad said that some of the traffic lights went down, and they had some generators or chargers to actually boost them back into life. So they were helping where the other people who normally would fix those things were too busy already.
Right.
So that's great. I'm glad everything pretty much worked according to plan. And
well, yeah, you have an emergency plan and you execute it, and our people all did a great job. And again, it's just one of those things you have to be prepared for and hope that you can mitigate it. You can't prevent it, but you can mitigate.
Mm-hmm. I had a quick question. I noticed that you, in my League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights newsletter, that you attended the political activism workshop last Saturday. The question there was, how should the public most effectively give input to and influence our elected representatives? And at the end, you can mention all those ways.
Yeah.
We'll save a couple
all
of
right,
minutes at the end because that's really important.
Yeah,
I mean, you have your own ideas of how to run things, but the feedback from everybody and everybody working together as a team is, of course, essential. All right. We're jumping into some questions now from the State of the City presentation, and these are questions that just came to my mind. And so we'll have John Conroy is here, and also Ned Apigian. John Conroy, our WHFR News Director, Ned Apigian, who's been a staff member at WHFR for many years and is a former city councilman, a couple terms, out in Dearborn Heights. So Ned's here to help ask you questions, too. John, go ahead with question number 3.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jay, and welcome, Mayor.
Yep.
I have a personal with Jack. My name is John, but my father's name was John also, and he was always called Jack, and my son is Jack. So
very good.
We're all connected here. Question 3. Okay, how's the new state-funded consolidated dispatch center coming along?
Well, it's coming along fine. We're, the construction and build-out, acquisition of equipment and training is all going forward. We're moving in the right direction. There's a lot going on statewide with that whole arena, because what's happening, the majority of the state has already gone with a new next generation kind of technology, And we're seeing that that's going to continue to come down, and eventually they're going to require everybody to use that same technology, which is good for everybody because it allows us to do things that currently we can't. It allows us to piggyback different callers so that you can have the caller stay online while you also work with whoever you're dispatching, whether it's police or fire, so that you don't have to drop one to get the other, which is what the old systems made us do. There's a lot of other great features, and it's also interoperability statewide, which means everybody can talk to each other, and if somebody is out of the area, they can still be reached. So it has a lot of great new benefits, and that's where we want to go, and eventually we know it's where the whole state's going to go eventually. There's no way around it.
So it is with the state, but so how many cities are actually participating in
that? Well, right now we have two, and we're meeting with another one for three. And there's a bit of resistance, and I understand it, you know, with us and them kind of thing. It just sometimes gets in the way of good efficiency.
But Dearborn Heights is not part of it yet?
Not yet.
Yeah.
We have a meeting coming up very shortly where we're bringing in the experts that we had contracted with to develop a plan, mm-hmm. and they're going to brief them on you know, that information that they had put together and so on, and we'll see what happens. But the capacity is always there to join on. As I said, if you don't do it now, you're going to have to do something yourself because the status quo is not going to be in place for very long.
Right. Presently, our systems are different.
Yeah. Is it just a matter of megahertz, but it's actually switching equipment, computers?
No, it's the type of equipment. Everything. But again, this addresses all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a question of, you know, it's a decision being made. There's other communities that like to come in, and we're trying to work through that. So and that's going to be the future. In most counties, the whole counties are, so Washtenaw County, there's one system for all of Washtenaw County, and it works beautifully. It's been around for about 3 or 4 years.
Wayne County doesn't have that.
Wayne County doesn't have it, but Oakland County does. Mm. So, like I said, you know, this is happening, and either we get proactive and do it, or it's going to be imposed on us, but it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. You're going to try to get common guidelines, obviously, to everyone to be a part of it.
It's going to be, when it's done, it means that everybody that work in any arena, police, fire, whatever, they're going to have ability to talk to whomever they're with. Mm. So if you have a major incident, everybody's going to be able to communicate.
And some of this equipment is operating right now, second floor of the Dearborn Administrative Center.
Right.
Great. Well.
Excellent.
We'll see how that goes. But obviously there has to be some cost reductions, and also there's some state funding and other grants that help with that development. Okay. So the next question.
Presumably in Dearborn Heights, it's supposed to save us $250,000, if I remember the number.
I'm not sure if it'll save that much directly from what you were paying, but it'll enhance you had one person on at night, for example, which means that if that one call comes in, they're tapped. This means that you're taking everybody who's involved, and they just take the next call, and they can deal with it. So if, you know, you've got a big incident in one community, you've got the backup that you wouldn't have if you were isolated and doing it yourself.
How is this affecting our police and departments, as well as police and fire departments?
Well, it's a great asset because if somebody, you know, criminals don't care where they do their crime. Excellent. And so what this would allow is that they'd hear each other's, they'd have the capacity to hear each other's calls and runs so that they'd be able to, in backup, the idea that we could catch somebody when they're leaving Dearborn Heights and coming into Dearborn, and we can catch them because we now can talk to each other.
The key is always alternative funding.
That always helps. I had a question about that. Do we have a single grant writer for the city, or each department, division, that when they become aware of monies, then they just say, well, let the chief do it or something?
No, we have both.
Okay.
So police and fire both have their own people who go out and do it because we're so active in that.
Right.
And then we have one for other activities within the city. But the police and fire each have people who just about full time are going after grants, and we've had incredible success with that.
And
that's worked out.
And it took us years to get a development office, believe it or not, a development foundation office for fundraising here at Henry Ford College. Of course, again, I started 50 years ago here, and it was slow going at the beginning because people say, well, to start the office, we've got to pay a full time person and a full time secretary, and they got to give office space and a computer. And Well, but it more than pays back for those people, obviously, if they're successful, and they need to be, of course, to keep their job. Mm-hmm. But it was always a question, well, should we just assign them to Allied Health or have one for the whole college? Yeah. And we do it sort of whoever can get it best done is the way it happens now. I was that grant writer for the college just briefly, got a couple small grants, and then they had a colleague of mine from the English division that took over, and it was all sort of, it was like a special assignment for a while, and then when they burned out from long nights writing grants to a deadline, you know, then they found someone else to jump on. But now we have a very organized office, and they're raising more money than ever, although not directly for us. I'm sorry. I mean, we're doing our Radiothon pledge drive right now, and go to our website, whfr.fm, if you'd like to help us.
In Dearborn Heights, we had a firewoman, a female, that was so proficient at it, that's all she does now.
Wow. Okay, good. Well, whoever can get there first and has the ability. It's hard to sometimes locate where the money is, because there's many different sources, different foundations and so on. But I think we're doing, from your State of the City presentations in all five parts, you announced so many initiatives to get grant funding and support from other areas, and that's what we got to do these days. Okay, part two, the police department. I'll do this one. Serious crimes are down, as you stated, and there's all kinds of statistics that that's true nationwide, pretty much. I mean, there's some exceptions, Chicago, but still, that's wonderful, and it's really unlike what we hear sometimes from the highest levels of government about how crime is rampant everywhere, like the most in 25 years or more. That's just not true, but there's from talking to some of the people who are running for the 19th district judgeship, they admitted that there were more minor crimes, like drug-related crimes that aren't usually called a felony, but perhaps misdemeanors, and right. that's troublesome.
Yeah, and that's, you know, we treat them just as aggressively as we treat any others. But, you know, we have on a per capita basis, we have more police officers and actually firefighters than other comparable communities. And so we try and get out and deal with that. But we have the beat system. Then we have people who are actually doing strategic work, which means they're kind of undercover. And where we think there is something going on, they focus on that. So we're really pretty well covered all the way through, the city on any given time.
But there is a rise in some minor crimes. I mean, petty theft, let's call it, but especially drug-related things.
Yeah, well, yeah. The petty theft, like taking things out of cars where people mm-hmm. haven't locked them,
yeah.
That's one of the things we've really been pushing, because it's one of the big things. We had a big impact on that this time, but we're just trying to say, lock it or lose it is the campaign. But,
yep.
You know, it always boggles my mind that people will leave their car doors open.
Mm-hmm. You know. With a briefcase on this. Yeah.
Where they think this is, California or something? Anyway, why did I say it's California? I don't know, but I'm sure they have petty crime out there too. Anyway, I just like to, this is sort of, you mentioned undercover in that, but
right.
Some people were not undercover. You mentioned in the police department section of the State of the City addresses that there's now 5 to 7 school outreach police officers.
Correct.
I wanted to know if they were full or part-time assignments, and what do they usually do in the schools? They just have a table and give out brochures? Yes. They do one-on-one. They do classroom presentations, or all of the above.
They're full-time police officers,
mm-hmm.
but they have assigned schools, and they go into those schools and get to know the students, work on programs with them, and we also have the whole thing of park and walk in all of our beats. So all of our officers are getting out, engaging, and you know, the idea is to create that relationship between the police officers and different community constituents, and we think the value added for the schools is very important. There's a relationship that they try to create. They're supportive. They'll get involved with some activities at the school. It isn't necessarily full, you know, the only thing they do, but it means that the relationship between the students and the officers become stronger, and the likelihood that we'll get information about problems like drugs in the schools and so on is heightened by the relationship and the trust that's built. And we've had great success with that, and that's why we expanded it, because mm-hmm. it's been working.
Sure. Yeah. So they're in the schools, and of course, 5 to 7 officers, even if they're working at this full time, was there 30-plus school buildings?
Well, and we started, and we've had for a long time in the high schools. Mm-hmm. Then this brings us down to the middle schools.
Okay.
So really, that's what we're trying to do strategically is work through that. The elementary schools, and you know, are not where we have to. I mean, we will if we need to, but there's no indication that there's any great need for that. So that's what the numbers come from, where we want to be.
From what you said, it sounded to me too just now that they're more they're finding ways to become involved with activities that are already going on,
right,
rather than making their own presentations, like
correct.
To an auditorium or something.
Yeah, it's their presence and their engagement, so that they're seen and so on. And then like over the summer, you know, they already know them, they see them, they understand who they are. The beat system is really a good way to make sure that the police officers become really familiar with certain sections
absolutely.
Of the city.
Yeah, yeah.
And so those are our thing of creating a different relationship between police officers and the citizens, making it much more a sense of a partnership. And that hasn't always been the case. So we're trying to really make sure that people have that sense that they have a confidence in and trust in our police officers.
And they're not there as like security guards per
no.
se. I mean,
no.
if needed, they can help with something, but that's not their prime function, to be like the bad guy that will crack down on whatever, you know.
Actually the opposite, that
yeah,
if you're doing
yeah.
good things, we're going to encourage right. it and support you.
Sure, of course. Well, that's important.
Jay, we have one yeah. in Dearborn Heights that's a posh position in the police department.
Posh, okay. If you say
after.
So, I don't know what that means. But
sought after.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you don't have as many schools, so.
With five school districts, which is ridiculous.
Well, I guess maybe you do. Yeah, sure. All right. Also in the police department, I'll just jump in here. John, you get the next question, number 8 and the next.
Okay.
But you mentioned real-time video feeds, which I put down on the list as cable TV feeds. But so they are video feeds, I think, from some of the parks.
Yeah.
My question is, who's watching those videos? Because that can get boring if nothing's happening. I just wondered how that's working out. You know, when there was cable TV
yeah.
thought of for Dearborn, there was like the so-called blue sky proposals back in 1980 that, they could do video monitoring of the whole city. They'll just attach
yeah.
to the cable system. And then the question came up, well, how many people would have to try to stay awake watching all these cameras? You know, you need a couple dozen people watching all these monitors at the same time, and they're going to sleep and they're snoozing. So what's the new functional possibilities of these videos,
feeds? That will apprehend the people who are doing mischief. So that's the ultimate goal.
But you're putting them in key areas.
Yeah, we're putting them in the parks, you know, in our public
mm-hmm.
parks
yeah.
and so
okay.
on. And that feeds into the police department, police station. And so the same people that are monitoring other items like that, in other words, the people who are there at the desk and supporting in mm-hmm. During the different shifts, they are watching those. But the other part of it is that if we can get a good view and we can get a picture of a person who's doing something wrong, the likelihood is much greater that we'll be able to apprehend them.
And are these feeds being recorded too?
Yes.
Yeah, because that's very
yeah.
valuable
yeah,
after so the fact too. Yeah.
So that's our point
yeah.
is, we want to let people know that don't think you're going to get away with it, that you're smarter than everybody else. We're going to find you. So, you know, one thing is to stop the crime, you know, when it's being committed. The other one is to make sure you get the criminals so that people begin to be discouraged about pursuing that career. And that's what we're trying to do.
I'm hogging the show here, but as long as we're on the video thing, what about some communities around the U.S. we know are putting on the chest cameras officers?
We've gone that way. We've
yeah.
already started that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's everybody's best interest because, you know, you get an unbiased view of what was happening and what was perceived.
Yeah.
And
depending on that camera angle, whatever
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
But still.
But the point is, if
mm-hmm.
it's here,
yep.
at least from the officer's point of view, it's going to show what the officer saw, what the officer confronted.
Exactly.
Oftentimes, these witnesses come up, and I don't, you know, the witnesses are fine, but mm-hmm. witnesses come up, and you get witnesses, and they have complete opposite opinion of what they saw,
mm-hmm.
and they were
sure.
at the same, you know. And so this is at least another tool because it says this is what the police officer saw, which in many cases is, from our point of view, very important that that's clear what they were acting on, what they saw, and therefore how their judgment was applied to that.
Okay, we'll come back with after this radiothon announcement, folks, pre-recorded. We'll come back with information questions about part three, economic development, in Mayor John B. O'Reilly's State of the City presentations. He's here as our special guest all hour on the WHFR Journal, WHFR.fm. So stay tuned here.
Hello, WHFR listeners. It's our annual radiothon, and we need your support to help with our many expenses of operating a non-commercial radio station. This year, your generous support will help us upgrade our aging on-air telephone system so we can continue to provide quality in-studio programming and remote broadcasts. So, for your donation of $52, we will send you our radiothon mascot, the WHFR Phone Lion. The WHFR Phone Lion is a cute and cuddly plush toy lion wearing a blue t-shirt with our WHFR logo on it. So this year, your donation of $52 will help us upgrade our phone line, and we will gladly send you our phone lion as a way of saying thank you for your support. So call now. The number to our phone lion is 313-317-4130.
Rawr.
That's 313-317-4130, or go to WHFR.fm to donate online.
Meow. Meow.
The WHFR Phone Lion, you know, like telephones, because we need new telephone system, internal telephone system. The college gives us these wonderful telephone lines coming in, but we need special equipment to interface with our broadcast equipment. And both internally and for remote broadcast, we have to have the latest ability to communicate. And it's not analog phone lines anymore, folks. So it's going to be about $8,000 we have to spend both for the studio and also for our new remote broadcast equipment. I know everybody wants to hear our broadcast from Dearborn Homecoming for 3 days. And I don't think AT&T wants to put in any more analog lines. I mean, they were kind of like that. I'm not sure we can find anyone knows how to do that anymore last year. So, okay. Well, we're here with our special guest on the new WHFR Journal, Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. of Dearborn. And we're asking him about the State of the City presentations, which he did back in February and is available from our website from February 17th broadcast at WHFR.fm. So part three of it was economic development. John?
Yes, sir, Jay. And I also want to just bring back another from the police department get-together or
okay.
question, and that is the earlier you plant the seed with young people, with that police officers are beneficial and helpful and good, and that just helps for their future lives, I think. And the DARE program comes into thought as far as that's concerned too. The elementary through middle school. So
also recruitment. There's a big shortage of police officers and firefighters throughout the country, and that's getting to be epidemic soon. Now we haven't had a problem. But we have an initiative. We go into the high schools and get kids to come in, and we'll pay for their college education to become, and they work at the offices, and so they get exposure. We get exposure to them, see what they're like, and then we have the choice of whether we hire them or not. But that way, we've been able to really increase the number of people from the community coming into policing.
Excellent.
But it's a big issue.
Yep. Well, and then the next question we have is regarding the Wagner Place project. Ford Motor Company has put in $60 million, 600 employees, and this is at the old Lord & Taylor.
No,
it's not at the Lord &
Taylor.
That's a different
on Michigan Avenue.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. So how did this come about at the Wagner Place?
It's really extraordinary because Ford Motor Company hasn't really done any new or acquired any new property that wasn't owned by Henry Ford himself when he bought it all in the 20s. Mm-hmm. So this is the first time in Dearborn's recent history or in history at all where they're buying new property that they didn't already own, and they're developing it in an area that isn't really where they do their business. They're moving in. And it's really exciting because they're looking at, and this is the big issue now, the biggest issue around in employment is the millennials. What is it going to take to get talented millennials? And let me tell you, I've been over 2 years we've been talking with Ford about this. Ford has to meet their long-term goals. of having the high technology to be at the cutting edge, they need to get the best talent in the country. And so they're looking at millennials and they're trying to say, what is it that's going to get them to decide to come here and work for Ford versus going anywhere else in the country? And so they're looking at what do they have to do to be competitive.
Yes.
And that's what this is all about, because this is a small piece of a project that's a couple, it's much bigger. And so they actually are going to take and put these 600 to 700 employees in an environment that doesn't look anything like a traditional Ford or anybody else's mm-hmm. environment. And it's an idea that way they'll be able to attract these people. They'll say, this is what I'm looking for. But on a larger scale, they're making the largest investment that's been made since Henry Ford I built the original Rouge plant. They're going to be actually renovating everything that they have that's not part of the plant itself. Mm-hmm. They're going to be doing all of the stuff at the glass house will all be redone, everything over there.
So this is a real sustainability project.
This is a 75-year commitment mm-hmm. From Ford, and they're going to do the glass house. They're going to do all the development stuff. Everything's going to be redone, and it's going to be redone in a very dramatic and different view of what the idea. And I've gone to, they have a couple prototypes they've done, and you mentioned the mall. Yeah. They took the Lord and Taylor property and other property outside of it and right. converted a space for 2,000 employees that are going to come in while their current digs are being redone.
Yeah.
They're going to be housed there for maybe 2 years. Then they move into their new digs, and the next group comes in.
Uh-huh.
So for over 8 years, there's going to be this turnover there at the mall, which is wonderful because there are also customers and everything else. But that's how dramatic this is. Everything that they own that isn't part of the actual plant is going to be redone and reimagined, and it's going to be all really what I'll say is cool stuff.
As I was going to say, that message to the new workers coming in is going to get them to want to stay
yeah.
versus so many companies losing their employees because they're not with the times today,
yep.
How things operate in major companies. So.
And I was interested in the newspapers, I think, this week. It was mentioning that the Wagner Place project in West Dearborn is going to be started in development officially a little later, maybe in the
yeah.
fall or
no,
pretty soon. Right
oh,
now, they're already digging.
They've flattened everything.
Yeah, they have flattened the buildings, right.
They'll be, within another month, they'll start construction.
Right,
so
and it'll be finished in 2018.
2018,
yeah. So
early
it'll be
2018.
Quick. It'll be quick. Yeah. That's really fast.
It wasn't 2 years ago we had the planning project associated with the train station, yeah. of which I was a guest. And
yeah.
I noticed that when I saw the buildings on the so-called Wagner project were never included in that study. And I'm wondering what that study's usefulness is now with all the was not coordinated with
yeah.
this new plan.
Well, first of all, at the point we started that, we didn't know what Ford was up to, so that we couldn't have done that. But we're still using a lot of that plan for other elements because, Ford is got one footprint, but we have to embellish that. We're looking to really, go up, have instead of a one-story properties, have them go up. We've got some other property that can be developed in that area. And then also looking out and seeing how the connectivity we're going to have
right.
with Detroit, because right now our proximity with Detroit gives us a lot of opportunities to attract new families and so on, at a price point that's affordable, and yet they're still very convenient to getting downtown to midtown and that sort of thing. Where
well,
a lot
that
of the
train's
going to
run a lot more frequently
yeah.
pretty
yeah.
soon.
We hope it's supposed to be also
right.
part of the transit system
to Ann Arbor and back
yep.
and forth.
Mm-hmm. Ned, you're already on a roll there. Ask about number nine about bike paths.
Yeah, I guess the bike path and how it influences. The situation on Michigan Avenue, I noticed that in Detroit, they've already started bike paths on the major thoroughfares.
Bike lanes.
Bike lanes.
Bike
yeah.
lanes is
bike
part
lanes,
of...
Yeah, that's right. what we're
it's
looking
at. It's not a path in the middle of Michigan Avenue.
No, it's
yeah.
a side.
So we're looking at that, and we've got a long-term plan, and we've implemented a lot of it. We did finally bring, the main trail that goes out all the way to our far
on Hines Drive.
Yeah, Hines Drive and all that. But now we're looking at how we can the most cost-effective way to begin to get some real size and texture to it, so that people can really take a nice long ride. So we're looking at some of the streets that go east and west that don't need to have parking on both sides, because there's because they have the house fronts the other street. Mm-hmm. That way we think we can do that very inexpensively. We just align that one side as the thing. So now we get connectors going east and west. We already have some north and south. And so we're looking at how we can begin to bridge it. Now, Michigan Avenue will always be a challenge. We're not going to have bicycling on Michigan Avenue, but we could have it set back from it.
Garrison
and,
or something.
Yeah, that's what we're looking at. And so we're doing some design. We're working on how we can do that, but it's doable. There's not a problem. We've got a couple things we want to launch, but I don't want to say anything because I don't get people excited before we do it.
Well, I was excited because you did mention those magic words, for me anyway, bike lanes, in the State of the City presentation, and that seems the concept, whether it's bike lanes or just dedicated streets that you just close to outside traffic that will go east, west, north, south, because bicycles, they're really for more than transportation. Certainly most people choose good weather. But I mean, they're more than just recreation. Right. They should be basic transportation, and because people can use either a pack or a basket on their bike and do some grocery shopping or, visit the town center. But that's hilariously unsafe for anybody to get to on a bike right now because of all the traffic there. Major design issues there. But however it can be done, it seems that, bicycles are very inexpensive by comparison with cars. And no disrespect to Ford Motor Company and their fine product, but there should be, certainly a big opportunity for people to choose bicycles for their major transportation. And that means going a good distance, maybe 5 or 10 miles one way to work through relatively safe passages. As you know, Michigan Avenue in the middle of town, there is a sidewalk that was recently sort of made better when they did some work on Michigan Avenue, but it's on the south side. And of course, there's those entry and exit lanes to Southfield Expressway that make it particularly challenging there. I don't know what can be done, but also the sidewalks aren't wide enough. I mean, a bike path is usually at least like five or six feet wide.
It should be 10 feet.
Yeah, I mean, so you can actually have a bicyclist pass another bicycle, or you even maybe get two directions.
Yeah.
So
we're working on a lot of stuff, and we're looking at the low-hanging fruit right now in terms of where the existing roadways are easier to do, and I'm not going to say anything because people get excited, but we're probably going to be talking about one big one soon. but this is an important thing, and with the state now owning the rail right of way, we can do hanging bridges, which is what's done in many communities where you don't even the bikes and walkers and joggers don't have any interface with the river or with the major thoroughfares. They are attached to each of the.
It's like a gentle ramp up to it, and you're above the
right, and you're above the fray.
The problem,
you don't have to worry
mm-hmm.
about all that. So once we can do that, and then that's really going to make a difference, because we can, we can go. We already have a good plan that's developed for going all the way from east to west Dearborn. And avoiding some of the major heavy traffic.
Well, let me know. I'll be the first one to ride that that bridge, whatever.
Right.
We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. also, in your economic development presentation for the State of the City, you mentioned form-based zoning. I think I heard it correctly.
Yeah.
What is that?
In downtown areas, you want to be more flexible. So you can identify areas where you want to see a higher density or have, development that might be, you're trying to encourage the way that things are developed. So you create a way that instead of having rigid rules or a rigid idea of what
business
it could
or
be,
residential,
right? You mean three-dimensional zoning in a sense.
So you're looking at saying, hey, you come in. These are the parameters that we're setting up. within those parameters, you can, you know, come in and present what you think would work and so on, and we have more flexibility. But it would be in the intense, so it would be the downtown areas, you know, where we're looking to get intensity. So because that feeds, everybody feeds off it. So it's not like broadly citywide at all. It'll only be in specific areas where that kind of development is going to benefit everybody.
I think the term would be multi-use, though.
Yeah. But this is a term of art. It's actually used in referring to that type of zoning.
I do know that some of the more exciting downtown areas I've ever visited are certain areas in Chicago, not South Chicago, but North Chicago and Toronto, very successful with whether it's called multi-use, but there's residential facilities, there's businesses, both small and large.
The correct term is mixed use.
Well, okay, I'm all for that, but whatever works, and I think that's exactly what we should be trying for, not the more rigid either-or residential or business, because that's not as much fun. Again, for you're going to attract millennials, they want places that are walkable, nearby, maybe business and you know, buying food or bread or other things, entertainment too.
Shopping.
So, yeah, right. Okay, well, we're up to part four. Amazing how quickly we can go here. We follow my plan and nobody else's. This is the new WHFR Journal special edition with Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. Neighborhoods. John Conroy, next question.
Sure. Okay, Jay, thanks. Weekly recycling is going to start again in July of 2017?
Well, weekly for the, you know, what we've been doing with the recyclables is every other week. And now with the new contract we have, it'll be every week.
Every week.
So that's
okay.
It, you know.
Why did you do it every other week? What was the gain?
It was. We didn't know what the volume would be, and so we were paying. And the contractor that we had at that time, we would have had to pay a great deal more to get it every week. And we thought, well, the volume. And it turned out the volume wasn't that great, except in certain areas. Some areas were still woefully low. Mm. So with the new contract, this contract actually was charging us less than we were paying with the old contractor, and that included, they were willing to include.
Great.
So Dearborn Heights, they do them both every week. Yeah. So if they saw an advantage in it, I'm surprised you didn't.
Well, actually, we have areas where it's still very low. Uh-huh. I mean, so anyway, but this is what we're doing.
I can't imagine in my neighborhood in East Dearborn. It's once every 2 weeks. It's usually the recycling barrels that are overflowing, not so much the trash barrels, which is good.
That's a very good sign.
Yeah.
What we've done is we've now partnered with the schools. So now we're doing recycling with the schools, and what the goal is there is we're teaching the children how to properly recycle, what goes in, what doesn't, how, you know, all that sort of thing, so that they can help get their parents to get engaged and to also do it right. Because the other problem we have is people who misuse that, and this is the big spoiler, and I don't know what's happening in Dearborn Heights, but one of the things that happens is if somebody throws in stuff that's not recyclable into a recyclable bin and it's caught, they send it back and it goes to a landfill. So all of that stuff is then landfilled instead. And so the whole goal is lost. Yeah. And that's why we really need to make sure that people put the right things into the recycler, because otherwise we lose all the advantage.
Schools recycling, that's great news.
We're working with them, and we're providing them the containers, and we're, you know, working with them on discounts because they've been wanting to do it, but it was just a matter of with all the different school buildings. So with us doing it through the city system, it works.
Well, and that brings up the question of what are proactive inspections?
Well, that's the idea that instead of it being a gotcha, you know, the last thing people want to see is an inspector coming in. We want to try and do it so that we're much more saying, look, here's what we need to do and this is why, to try and change that relationship so that people understand it's in their best interest, you know, to make sure they're following the rules, they're doing it right. And so, you know, that's kind of a way that, you know, you make sure you have an inspection system that's going to work. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that while with rental properties we've had a regular schedule thing, with other homes people can go 40 years and never have their house inspected, right?
Right.
And then we found that when all of a sudden, because we don't inspect the house that's owned and by a person.
Even though the tenant changes. If he's
No, not the tenant. Oh. I'm talking that you own the house.
Yeah.
Who goes in and checks on somebody who's owning a house, right? Yeah. But if you don't, you find a house that's in such bad situation, and we've had that. So this is where you go, look, we're going to come and inspect the house just to let you know where things are, or, you know, what you might want to invest in, because it's going to deteriorate your property. And historically, I mean, that's the problem.
And even somebody might not, if they do decide all of a sudden to buy the place, and there's so many things they have to do to bring it up to code, they might not want to buy it. I mean, they might have to, if you want to sell it, I'm going to assume that. I mean, I can't fix it all myself. Well, a lot of people say, I can't afford the extra money to buy it. So it's a good thing for the homeowner to know if they're way out of whack with the regulations, too.
Well, in fact, that's one of the things we've done, which is working, is we said, look, you have to do all of the things that are safety related, okay? But then you can now close, which we didn't used to allow them to do. You can close, and you have 6 months, if you want it, to do the other items that aren't safety items if you're the homeowner. So a new homeowner, and this is what you're saying, new homeowners buying the house, and then they also have to make these investments, we'll say, as long as all the safety items are met, we'll let you use your sweat equity to get that property up, but it has to be done within the 6 months.
So how are you choosing the people to be inspected proactively?
I mean, this is what I'm saying, is if they're buying a new house or whatever.
It happens at certain times.
We're not going to start going into homes, but we're looking at how we can encourage people to, for example, what I'd like to consider is that maybe we let people call us and ask us if, I've got an old, this or that, a furnace and whatever. Could somebody come out and say, what's the useful life or how long am I going to go, and help them with that? I mean, the idea is we want them to make a prudent choice, but sometimes, they're waiting for it to break down. Well, that's not the best way for either party.
And even that information could be valuable, because then you can go and ask for the right upgrade to a particular contractor who might suggest a lot more than what you actually need for the code, although that might be a good idea too. So this would be good advice to have. Right. And again, I always forget the name, since there's been a couple reorganizations over the last 30 years, of building and safety. But there are people who will, if you call, they'll be able to schedule an inspection for one reason or another.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Well, one of the things I thought you were proposing, a 10-year inspection on home ownership based on tax records, but the average mortgage was 7.5 years, and I found out from our councilman in Dearborn Heights, who's a realtor, that it's average mortgage is more like 5 years.
Yeah.
So you could require a 5-year inspection and do what you're planning on doing for home ownerships. Because with tenants that you own property, it's required to have a home inspection.
Right.
But a lot of people get away without having it. Doing it is a problem.
Yeah.
But
it's especially an issue, I think, with rentals. Although, Mayor O'Reilly, I think in your address, the State of the City address, you also said that rentals are down in the city, which is good.
I mean,
it's going more back to individual ownership by the people who are living there.
And a lot of that were people who weren't landlords by choice, but because they were underwater and they couldn't sell the house, so they moved. I had a nephew who lived in Dearborn. Mm-hmm. He went down south for a job, and same thing. He had to rent because they couldn't make enough at that time. Now he can sell it, and it doesn't have to be a landlord anymore. So we're seeing that. We're seeing people who I think were just waiting for the economy to make it possible.
Okay, I'm going to take this one because it's been a question for, maybe 15 years at least. So when will the sewer separation project be completed? Now, it was, if I understand...
2028.
Okay, well, there you go. Easy answer, 2028. That's wonderful.
When the whole city's done. We're doing it year by year by year by year. Are you kidding? This is the best thing. Dearborn will have the newest infrastructure, the newest roads, the newest water system that exists in all of our greater Detroit area. So,
and
I mean,
Jay's question is, well, who's going to pay for it?
It's already being paid for.
Yeah,
we're doing it.
Yeah,
we're in the process.
And it's one of the best investments anybody can make.
So if we're going to keep going to do the whole city, I mean, they're going after my streets in my area in East Dearborn this summer.
Yeah.
They're going to get the markers up, and they're, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
It's really an outgrowth of the what used to be the EPA requirement for a combined sewer overflow project. And you came up with, I think when you became mayor, the idea of combining projects, since we needed water system upgrades and sewer upgrades anyway, and street upgrades, to do it all together. As long as we're putting the money out, and have to put the money out, we can just maybe for a few extra bucks, I assume it's a little more, but it's really necessary. So this is wonderful.
Well, and that's the one thing you have to understand. We were going to just store it. Combined
in a basin somewhere,
and then pump it out and send it to sewage. And of course, any fresh water that gets mixed with any
contaminated
thing from
sewage water,
contaminated, then is all sewage.
Yeah.
Now we're separating the water, and so the natural rainwater is going into the river. It's not going to be treated as sewage. It's not going to back up the housing. And here's one of the things that's interesting: by separating all of those, the likelihood that you'll get sewage back up in your house goes down dramatically. Okay. So what we saw in 2014, it would not happen because the water, you know, when rain, it's the water, but when the water mixes with the sewage, it all becomes sewage.
Mm-hmm.
So if you did get water in your basement, at least it wouldn't be sewage because the sewage wouldn't have been mixed in.
Right.
But the advantage to having new roads, new sewers, we upgrade the lines from 6 to 8 inch lines for the water intake. Mm-hmm. So everybody's got, like, you went to a new subdivision, at least from the road down, it'll be just like you moved into a new subdivision.
Mm-hmm. I can hardly wait. And in 2028, I'll be, you're going to stop assessing the extra money each year, right?
Money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I think it's about $300. It's in Wayne County taxes is how it's charged now.
No.
It's right on the water bill.
Yeah, it's on the water bill.
I thought I was seeing something. Forget about it.
Wayne County? No, we don't have anything to do with Wayne County taxes.
Yeah, my understanding was that, and I'm wrong. Okay, is that just for the sake of the combined sewer overflow project, you came up with the idea of improving, say, half the lines in Dearborn, and then we'd have to find our own money for the. But the sewer separation project is for the whole city.
No, let me make it clear.
No, okay.
We issued a bond way back to build those caissons, those
yes,
things
I know
that
go
underground.
Right.
Well, that's the money we're using.
Okay.
When we stopped doing that, and we also got back about, oh my gosh,
over $400 million
from contractors we sued for that
right.
project.
I remember the
so
suits,
we're using that money is being used for this project.
Do the containers work? Are they working?
No, we're not using containers.
The ones that got built are working.
They're
working. There's three of them.
One got tilted or something.
Yeah. Well, no, a bunch of them. There was.
There were several failures.
There were lots of failures, but that's all abandoned. So the only thing we have is we have three of them that are functioning, where the combined the water and sewage goes in together. It sits at the bottom of a deep, pit, literally, and then it gets pumped back out once it's dry. Once the wet weather is gone, and it goes still down to be treated. So that we'll never get away from because it was already done, and we weren't going to undo it. But the rest of the city will all see this.
So that was done when you had a combined system.
Yeah. Okay. Moving right ahead. We only have about 8 minutes before Highway 61 gets started with more Radiothon 2017. Special guests are signed up, and the phone lines will be open at that time. And you can pledge your support of this 32-year independent, non-commercial educational experiment anytime at that point. Go to whfr.fm. Real quickly on to finish the neighborhood section on your State of the City address, Mr. Mayor, which pool is going to be replaced? I think you said a pool.
Right in your neighborhood.
I didn't know I had a pool in my neighborhood.
No.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever.
Going from dirty water to clean water. No?
Yeah.
Okay. Well. Okay. Let's move on. I'd like to do some of the concluding beyond the State of the City addresses, and this is just a crazy one. But as a taxpayer, so now with more taxes being assumed that might be paid from the new Ford Motor Company developments and other developments in the city, how are the city's finances for the foreseeable future? No new taxes.
Well, no, and we haven't, you know.
Never can guarantee that.
We've paid off a lot of the millage debts. I mean, not the millage debts, but the money that we borrowed, you know, for the golf course, for the ice skating center, for all of those have been paid off. So that's money we don't have to go out and pay. And so we're in pretty good shape. We'll still be getting some replacement for the personal property tax money for a while. That'll eventually go away, but for a while that's in
the state
play.
Is still keeping
that's
that going for a little while. Yeah. Okay.
Well, under the change that was made in terms of how we get funded, and then so that's going to happen. Obviously, the Ford Motor Company stuff will be a big help as it comes online, but it's going to come online over a 10-year period.
It won't be personal property, but it'll just be property taxes.
So I mean, I can say that we're right now we still have a healthy fund balance and we're doing okay. The biggest issue for especially older communities, but a lot of communities, is the post-retirement costs. So post-retirement costs are the big issue right now because we guaranteed, that people would have money to retire on. That's not so much the challenge as we then threw in at some point years and years ago, they threw in, well, we'll also pay for post-retirement health care. And at that time...
Oh, you're talking about employees.
Yeah, and health care was so cheap at that time. Private sector, everybody was doing that. It, of course, turned out that it's now more costly per year. You have to put more into that than you do into pensions. So we closed our traditional pension systems, but that cost is still there. And the state, right now at the state, they're looking at how to deal with that because the biggest challenge to most municipalities is that post-retirement health care. That's the number one thing that's really got everybody in a hole. And so that's a hot button. We're obviously involved in watching very closely to see how that plays out.
So you do what General Motors does, give you a stipend annually and say, figure it out for yourself.
Well, it's harder because our Constitution has a requirement for public pensions, which the auto companies didn't have.
No, I don't mean the pension. I'm talking about the health care.
Well, but they consider that still part of that because it was done under contract.
Okay. So any talk about the new state and federal government or the newer continuing state or federal government administrations, any expected losses of funds? Are they planning anything else, like taking away the personal property taxes, that we have to fight against?
You're talking about at the federal level?
Yeah. Well, either.
Biggest concern. Well, the state is talking about cutting taxes. Now, this isn't money coming to us.
Right.
The state is talking about, or at least in the legislature, they're talking about cutting taxes, and they haven't even done what they're supposed to do. I mean, for example, the thing about fixing the roads, okay? Well, the fix they had for the roads, they brought half of it was real money, and the other half is supposed to be done in 2018, okay, by another legislature. So, I mean, that's the crazy thing. That was a fiasco, and the public didn't get it. They said, we now have taken care of the roads, but only half the money is even been available and will be available. But the other thing about talking about reducing taxes at the time where we're far behind in so many different areas doesn't make any sense. And I hope that it doesn't go forward. The governor is not supporting it, but there's some real push in the legislature. In Washington, as we listen to some of the things that are being thrown out, at least through the Oval Office, they're talking about making incredible cuts in social programs and so on. And I'm telling you, the brunt is going to fall on local governments they're here.
Talk about trickle down.
Yeah, it'll trickle down. And so that's what we're mostly concerned about, is they're going to create a great deal more problems in all of our communities if they cut all those programs that are the only thing left for them, the fail-safe for them. It's going to get really I think, very troublesome.
Your constitutional share of your refund back from the state, they'll stay the same? The Act 51 money you get?
Well,
from the-
some does. Actually, under Headley, they're supposed to be maintaining the same level of money coming back to local governments as was in existence before Headley, the percentage. And they haven't done it, and we've proved it. They're $800 million behind in local government funding. And so that's an issue that's really a hot button.
John, big question here, number 18.
Okay, Jay. In the past year, what are you most proud of accomplishing?
Oh, I think there's a lot of things I say I'm proud of. But I think it's that we set a platform for how we're going to go forward the next 10 years. In 2011, I brought together a bunch of people from different parts of the city, and we created a five-year plan to get out of the recession, and we called it 2016. And we worked it. We've actually demonstrated it, because now this past year I brought another group of people. Some were the same, some were new. And we did a 10-year outlook.
Okay.
And this 10-year outlook is really, really good. And it shows how we did follow the five-year plan. It worked very well for us. Now the 10-year plan is saying, okay, now that we've stabilized and we've got fairly predictable funding, now how do we go forward over the next 10 years to make Dearborn even stronger and better in the future? So those two tools have both. We did polling, so we have polling data to see what the citizens want, and then we had citizens themselves being the ones who developed it, and it's really it's a great format. It's been terrific.
Short-term and long-term targets to shoot for. That's great. Yep.
Finally, Mayor O'Reilly, I got it from a website right now that you're intending to run again for mayor of Dearborn.
Yes, that's
so you're
intention.
Announcing officially in public on WHFR. At least, right?
The
you probably told
making
a
waves.
Number of friends. That's right. So, thank you very much on that. Do you have a campaign slogan yet?
I don't use campaign slogans. I just say, here I am.
Here's your record.
You want to go at it. Here's my record.
And of course, this show will be podcast, folks, for anybody to listen to all the way up to the election in August, where there are six candidates, including yourself, that'll be the first election. And then, of course, in November, it'll be the final top two candidates. So good luck in getting your message out. Thank you for being here. This is something we do every year with you, and we appreciate your comments. Being that college professor type, I always have questions between the words when I hear or read something. I should mention also, folks, there's a very, very helpful description, sort of a report about the city of Dearborn in the last year. That's also it's a PDF file, printable. You can read that on City of Dearborn website too. It covers more areas and topics than actually that your video presentations does.
Yep.
About 12 pages or so, maybe a little bit more. 12 pages, two sided, whatever. And I highly recommend that to our listeners who are great citizens. The budget process for next year is beginning, and there'll be some. We'll talk about this next week on this show. Some dates in March, and March is almost over.
March is almost over.
Yeah, but and also in April, that people can come to workshops and give their input on that too. Yeah. What's the best way? The question I posed at the beginning: what's the best way for people to give you input about their ideas?
Well, they can go online, or they can just send me a note, whatever. They can get me very easily at City Administrative Center, and so I'm happy to get any kind of input.
You're not doing those open office times. I think Mayor Hubbard did those for a while.
I think the value added is just being out and getting to places.
All the events
stuff,
you can, as many people as possible.
And then you're face to face and you can talk. But I get a lot of emails and a lot of everything is posted. So people send emails. That's a good tool.
Not to mention Facebook. Ooh.
Yeah.
So we're not on Instagram, and you don't tweet.
Not Instagram, and I sleep, I don't tweet.
That's the spirit.